From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's up, beautiful people? Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We have a ton to talk about. In just a moment, we'll be chatting with Dan Dickerson, the play-by-play announcer for the Detroit Tigers Sports Radio Network. Can't wait to talk to him and chat it up with the Tigers' recent struggles as of late. We'll also talk about Bauer. Yes, the Pistons have a new GM, ladies and gents. And Barbershop Wednesday is going to be an interesting one. What should Spartan fans think about Nick Saban? You don't want to miss that and so much more on today's show. But before, as always, before we get to all of that, here are your current sports quick hit headliners.
I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Wednesday, June 4th. Well, the Diamond Classic Finals are set for tonight. Yesterday at Cooley Law Stadium, Grand Ledge had 10 runs after three innings, and the DeWitt Panthers could not keep up as the Comets earned an 11-6 victory to advance to the final tonight at Kircher Municipal Park. In Game 2, the potential game-winning run for Eaton Rapids was thrown out at home plate to end the bottom of the 7th inning. Then, Charlotte scored the winning run on a balk in the top of the 8th to edge the Greyhounds 4-3 in the Diamond Classic semifinal. The Orioles at 20-7 will face Grand Ledge 29-8 at 7 p.m. tonight at the Kircher Municipal Park for the 53rd annual Dean Chippy Capital Diamond Classic title. And if it rains, the game will be played at 7 on Thursday at Municipal Park again. To basketball, Michigan head coach John Boeheim made an inconspicuous announcement in a media gathering that Max Bielfeldt underwent hip surgery recently and will miss much of the summer. Bielfeldt, a redshirt junior, is Michigan's lone returning big man with collegiate experience. He appeared in 19 of Michigan's 37 games as a deep reserve, averaging 0.8 points, 1.1 rebounds, and a 28.6% field goal percentage last season. To the Pistons, they named Jeff Bauer their new general manager on Tuesday as part of an offseason overhaul in which Stan Van Gundy was hired last month as coach and team president. Bauer was coach at Marist College last season and has been general manager and coach in the NBA previously. The Tigers, after pitching 7 scoreless innings just like last week, Anibal Sanchez could only watch as the Blue Jays erupted in the 9th inning, scoring 5 runs, including a 3-run homer by Brett Lowry. Joe Nathan allowed 4 Toronto runs and a familiar late-game collapse from the Tigers, who have now lost 11 of their last 15 games. Rick Porcello will try and right the ship tonight, facing knuckleballer R.A. Dickey, first pitch at 7:08 p.m. The Tigers are not just on the field, but paid attendance at Comerica Park is down more than 10% from last season. This is according to baseballreference.com. While the team's attendance struggles were mostly hard in April, when weather played a consistent factor, strange to see this first-place team suffering like they are. Nick Saban is cashing in again. Yes, he has a new deal from the University of Alabama System Board of Trustees. They unanimously approved the pay package that will see the Crimson Tide head coach make a whopping $6.9 million a year in the next 8 seasons. Saban's base salary is $6.5 million, with a potential $400,000 in contract year completion bonuses. And the deal includes a potential $700,000 additional money per year with performance bonuses. Saban's new deal makes him one of the highest paid public employees in the United States. Wow. Former Dolphins quarterback Dan Marino has decided to withdraw his name from a concussion-related lawsuit that was filed last week against the NFL. He said, quote, "I authorize the claim to be filed on my behalf just in case I need future medical coverage to protect me and my family in the event I later suffered from the effects of head trauma. In doing so, I did not realize I would be automatically listed as a plaintiff in the lawsuit against the NFL." The Hall of Famer was one of 15 players to file the lawsuit against the NFL on May 30th. Marino's decision to withdraw just comes one day after the LA Times made the lawsuit public. Tony Paca is expected to play this Wednesday, according to head coach Greg Popovich. He said in a media event, quote, "He's getting better every day, and I expect him to play." Tony Parker did not practice Tuesday, but is expected to be back for Game 1 tonight. He aggravated the injury Saturday, missing the second half of San Antonio's series-clinching victory over OKC in the Western Conference Finals. And finally, Portugal and Real Madrid star Cristiano Ronaldo is suffering from tendonitis in his left knee. The 29-year-old Ronaldo was rested for the 0-0 draw with Greece last week when it was declared that he was originally being troubled by an expected thigh problem. Ronaldo has netted 51 goals and 47 appearances for Los Blancos over the year. Those are your current sports headlines. Again, I'm Alex Shark. Time to send it back to Al in the studio.
Whoa! Man, that's a lot, Alex. Thank you for that. Thank you for bringing those current sports quick hit headlines. If you want to call in and comment on any of those, our phone lines will be open this entire hour. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. And just remind you all that that was a misprint in our headliners. Game one in the NBA Finals will be tomorrow night, folks. Tomorrow night, NBA Finals, Spurs and Heat. Looking forward to that one. So, yeah, speaking of social media, you guys were really adamant yesterday when it came to our whole Top 5 Tuesday segment. For those that didn't join us on yesterday's Current Sports, we had a pretty cool Top 5 Tuesday where we kind of, and Matt brought this to my attention actually on Monday, after the show, and he said, check this out, Al. It was an article posted online that allowed you to sort of be your own GM, and traveling back in time and be your own GM when it came to the MSU men's basketball team. You could build your own lineup, but the catch is, your starting five lineup, so point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and center, every position in the starting five, only in the Izzo era players. Only Izzo era players, but you only have $15 to do so. And to see how you would divvy up that $15 per position, you would look at this chart, and the chart has each position broken down, and it has the value of each player listed on the left of the chart. So like a player for in the point guard category, for $5 is the most that you can bid on a player. $5 for Mateen Cleaves, $4 for Kalen Lucas, $3 for Keith Appling, and so on and so forth. So they did that for each position, and we kind of broke down our starting five and how we would divvy up our money, and you know, we kind of debated on whether or not who had the best team, you know, between Alex, Matt, and I. And, you know, we posted this on our Facebook page, again, at facebook.com/currentsports, and also my Twitter, and many of you decided to weigh in and comment on it. Just to read a few here, Paul Henderson says, at point guard, he'll take Mateen Cleaves, shooting guard, Ager, small forward, Shannon Brown, power forward, Zach Randolph, and center, Andre Hudson. Interesting. Now, Nick Merginer, he says, first, I milk everything I can from the Spartan Fund, then get all the $5 players. I like that. That's hilarious, Nick. That's pretty smart. That was a smart response, Nick. I like that. But if he had to stick to the $15, he would say point guard, Kalen Lucas, shooting guard, Mo Ager, small forward, Mo Pete Peterson, power forward, Delvon Rowe, and center, Adrian Payne. Not a bad lineup. I'll read one more here, or two more here, from Serpentitious Blue. Interesting Facebook name, Serpentitious Blue. She says, I need more than $15, but I will take Cleaves, Bell, and Peterson are a must. And last but certainly not least, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR, decided to get in on the fun. And he said he'll take Cleaves, Harris, Mo Pete, and Smith. There you have that. So, and play 4 and 5. So, there you have that, guys. Again, you can weigh in on this. We had a lot of fun with that segment for our Top 5 Tuesday. You can weigh in on it. Just simply go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. We have the chart posted, and you kind of can have fun with your friends. And, you know, it's got to be a way where you can kind of simulate who has the best team statistic-wise. I don't know. We'll have to kind of dive into that. And maybe if you look at the career stats while these players were at MSU and try to break them down and compare them, maybe you could kind of try to do a math calculation as to who has the best squad. But we certainly had a fun time with that one. We'll also remind you all, folks, that Current Sports TV will be back in action next week, okay? Next week, Wednesday, each and every Wednesday. Well, just about each and every Wednesday, we tape Current Sports TV at Studio F here on the campus of Michigan State University inside the Communication Arts and Sciences building. And it's going to be a great time. Great time next week. And I will be sitting down with Mateen Cleaves. Yes, Mateen Cleaves, arguably the greatest leader on the hardwood to ever grace the hardwood here at Michigan State University. He has gone on to do some great things. He is also an analyst now for Fox Sports Detroit with the Detroit Pistons, and also is doing some great work on Sirius XM Radio on the NBA channel there. So I sometimes tune in, you know, here and there to check him out, and he's doing a fantastic job. But I'll be sitting down with Mateen to talk about, you know, to go back in time and talk about his career here at Michigan State University, playing for Tom Izzo and the men's basketball team, and so much more. All of the incredible charitable endeavors he's gone on. He's always doing. If you know about Mateen Cleaves, he always has his hand in the cookie jar doing something, especially when it comes to the community. Okay, and he has a few basketball camps that will be taking place this summer, where it's really, really cost effective for any kid who wants to be involved in it. And it's a week long thing. He'll be talking about that and so much more. If you want a chance to meet Mateen and you know, be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. All right, yeah, you have that. And also on June 25th, it's kind of a preview of what else is coming later on this month as far as current sports TV is concerned. Charlie Bell, yeah, another great guard here at Michigan State University, another Flintstone, if you will. He will be joining me on June 25th. That's also a Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Both of those are open online right now at WKR.org if you want to sign up for free and be a part of any of those live audiences. So why don't you sign up for both of them? I would love to see your faces on doing both of those tapings, okay? Should be a great time. Okay, well, we have a stacked show in store for you later on during our second segment on today's current sports. I'm excited because we will have Dan Dickerson, who is the play-by-play voice for the Detroit Tigers radio network. And Dan is going to really dive into what in the world is going on with the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers have many people shaking their heads and scratching them at the same time, shaking them and scratching them at the same time, because right now this team is just in a slump that they just cannot seem to get out of, folks. I really don't get it. And it seems as though the struggles that this team has ensued during this whole slump really has a lot to do with, one, the bullpen, which I won't put all on the bullpen, especially last night, and two, just the lack of runs. They just are cold right now. They're going through a cold spell right now that I just do not get. Now, I guess in a way, you can blame last night's loss, with the closing, because Joe Nathan is terrible right now, and he was not great last night. Arguably the worst night of his career. He wasn't good, folks. And the Tigers haven't been good for the past few weeks now. So we're going to talk to Dan and really dive into what exactly is going on with this team and what does he see that needs to improve if the Tigers are going to get out of this funk. We know that a baseball season, as I always say, is a long step-by-step process. It's over 100 games. It extends so long. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint, folks. So very well, in a few weeks, we could be talking the exact opposite of what the Detroit Tigers are doing right now. But it's hard to ignore the fact that they haven't played great baseball, and I'm excited to dive into what exactly is going on. So you don't want to miss that again. That's during our second segment of Current Sports. Dan Dickerson, play-by-play voice for the Detroit Tigers radio network. He will be joining me with that. And you know what? Barbershop Wednesday, just give you a kind of a preview here. On Barbershop Wednesday today, in light of, you know, the huge contract that Nick Saban has now signed with Alabama, a redonkulous contract, actually a $6.9 million a year contract for the next 8 seasons. I mean, that's crazy. It makes him one of the highest paid public employees in the U.S. of A. Can you believe that? My goodness. And, you know, if you go back in time, you remember that Nick Saban, you know, one of his foundational steps, I guess you could say, happened to be right here on the campus of Michigan State, as he was a one-time head coach for the Michigan State Spartans. And, you know, I always bring up this because, you know, always the night before, I kind of know what I want to talk about on the show. I kind of tweet out there. Those of you who follow me on Twitter at AlMartinWKR, I kind of tweet out kind of a preview of what we'll be discussing. You know, last night when I heard about this contract, I immediately tweeted out, oh, we'll definitely be talking about this Nick Saban contract. And many of you Spartan fans, still to this day, even though Saban hasn't been rocking the green and white for quite some time, many of you still feel pretty salty anytime Nick Saban's name is brought up. And I got a bunch of tweets about it, and many of you, a few text messages from a friend of a few of my friends who went to MSU, a few of my really good frat brothers who text me about it as they saw my tweet. And it really just makes me shake my head sometimes, you know, because a lot of time has passed now. And I just really want to dive into, first, one, where does your dislike, if you do dislike Nick Saban, it felt as though he did Michigan State wrong, why? Why is that so? I want to get your thoughts on that. Is there, for those who do have a little bit of animosity toward Nick Saban, I want you to call in at 517-355-9527. I want to know why. Because our Barbershop Wednesday topic is revolved around this whole subject on whether or not Spartans should dislike Nick Saban. So it's going to be an interesting one. Definitely interested to get Alex and Matt's thoughts on this. But we want you to call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, and get your thoughts on this. Because, you know, many people weren't pleased around here in the land of Sparty. Many people weren't pleased around this area with the way that Nick Saban left the team. And many of you are still harboring onto that animosity, and I want to get your thoughts on it. So call us up here at Current Sports. Again, if you don't happen to be by a phone, you can go to facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKR. Well, we still have a ton to talk about. Matt Lucky and Alex Shark now join me. Guys, how you doing? Happy hump day.
I wish it was better. Yeah.
I know, it's raining.
It's raining disgusting out there.
It is. It's pretty bad. You know, I actually walked out, went out knowing that it was raining, and forgot to grab my jacket and pretty much got soaked on the way in. But hey, it looks like the Diamond Classic, man. The finals are supposed to be tonight at Kirchhoff Municipal Park. Rained out again for the finals, so it's probably will be pushed to Thursday at 7 o'clock. That's what it's looking like right now. If it's supposed to rain all day, but yeah, I wish it was a sunshiny day. But hey. We're alive and well. Alex, how you doing, man?
Yeah, the rain is bad, and when it comes to the Diamond Classic, man, how about Grand Ledge just consistently so good every single season?
But you know what? Looking at that game, Alex, not for sure. There's nothing's for sure with a loss when it comes to Grand Ledge. They're so good. I at least thought that DeWitt was going to point it out. Because DeWitt, if you remember, at the beginning of the season, DeWitt beat Grand Ledge not once but twice in the same day in a doubleheader. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe DeWitt has turned the corner. Looking at how they've played these past few weeks and to get to this point, it just seemed as though Alan Chanko and that squad were just kind of destined. But then Grand Ledge kind of woke up. They always wake up. Pat O'Keefe has that thing rolling like clockwork, and they were pretty good yesterday. But yeah, it's fun to watch. Congratulations, though, to DeWitt. It was a great season for them. So definitely hats off to them. All right, guys, let's dive into our first subject. I want to briefly touch on something we talked about yesterday, guys. Dan Marino, if you remember on the show yesterday, we talked about Dan. Dan, a famed quarterback in NFL history, one of the greatest players of all time. Well, Dan made headlines yesterday due to the fact that Dan, it seemed as though this had happened, Dan had filed a lawsuit against the NFL when it comes to this whole concussion ordeal. So we talked about it on here. You know, I gave a huge rant about how, you know, this is great because now this lawsuit finally has a big name, and it really, and Matt, you talked about how this really puts a spotlight on it now and can really, you know, just harbor when it comes to the youth who want to play the game of football, really now puts a huge asterisk as to parents out there allowing their kid to play football because you got a name like Dan Marino in the whole mix. But then you also kind of brought up, Matt, that, you know, and Apache, our caller yesterday, brought up this too. Brought up the fact that you questioned kind of his timing for doing this, for filing this lawsuit, now that he is no longer a broadcaster for the NFL Network. And, you know, it really set off a light bulb, if you will, in my head. Because today, especially today, that bulb is shining bright, really bright right now. It's about an 80-watt light bulb now, okay? It was a 50-watt. Now it's on 80, folks. Because now Dan has decided to withdraw his name from that concussion-related lawsuit that was filed last week against the NFL. Now, he says here, a pretty interesting quote here, quote, "I authorized a claim to be filed on my behalf just in case I needed future medical coverage to protect me and my family in the event that I had later suffered from the effects of head trauma. In doing so, I did not realize I would be automatically listed as a plaintiff in a lawsuit against the NFL." Ah, man, I don't know about that quote, man. That quote seems pretty fishy. You know, right now, again, this is an opportunity for me and we talked about it yesterday, the opportunity for this lawsuit to finally have a face when it comes to this whole concussion lawsuit ordeal. And now it makes me wonder, the fact that this is a lawsuit. This is not just, you know, this is not anything small here. This is a lawsuit that he has decided to pull out and says that he did not know. It makes it seem as though he was just kind of dumbfounded that his name was even in this, in the whole ordeal for this concussion lawsuit. And I'm like, how do you not know that your name isn't involved in this? Because it's a lawsuit. This is a legal matter here. And it really makes me wonder why he decided to pull out, Matt. Because maybe, you know, maybe this is a guy who's looking to get back into the broadcasting business. Maybe this is a guy who wants to go back to the NFL Network. Who knows? Maybe he wants to be employed in the NFL in some form, way, shape, or capacity. And you can't have a lawsuit against your employer, obviously, and do that. And I think that had a lot to do with it. And this makes Marino look bad in a way, Matt, in my opinion. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I mean, he got some flack for joining the lawsuit anyway, just because he is such a high-profile guy and because you don't normally associate him with the kind of post-concussive symptoms that other players are talking about when they file their lawsuits. And now it just looks like, well, okay, I made a mistake. People didn't like it. I'm out. Maybe I have a future with the NFL in some capacity, like you said. Right. Maybe whether he's a broadcaster or working in a front office or something, it seems like he still has future earning potential with the league, and he doesn't want to jeopardize that. And from the business perspective, sure, that's fine. But from a public perspective, when your name is on a lawsuit that is the, you know, hottest button issue in the sport,
right?
Seems like a snafu. And it's a big mistake from Marino and his camp. I'm sure one or more of his lawyers will be looking for new employment or a new client.
Right.
It's just hard to believe that a mistake like this could happen with that kind of, you know, client and with that kind of case. I mean, this is a big deal. This is national news immediately.
It is.
And now him rescinding his name is national news again.
And just looking
and it
at
just
the
looks
quote,
bad yeah, all around.
If you look at the quote, he said, "I authorize a claim to be filed on my behalf." So he knew that he was filing this lawsuit. He goes on to say, I authorize a claim to be filed on my behalf just in case I needed future medical coverage to protect me and my family in the event I later suffer from the effects of head trauma. That quote, just looking at that sentence right there for me, Matt, it's like, okay, you knew what you were doing here. You knew, and I want to know what the timetable when this was filed, because I think that also has a lot to do. And maybe this was years and years back when he didn't have.
I actually have a quote right here. Within the last year.
Within the last year. Come on now. I mean, that's come on. You knew what you were doing, but now I think he sat back and started to just really. I think reality started to hit him. Said okay. Well, I maybe want to get back in the business of TV or something like that. I maybe want to be employed by the NFL in some form of capacity. Maybe this isn't the smartest thing to do. I think maybe that crossed his head, and then he said, okay, I got to retract this somehow.
Yeah, and I guess it's understandable that he retracted it immediately, but it still looks bad.
I feel like
if you're going to do it,
right,
stick with it
and become
the face of, you know, the fight against the NFL in terms of the concussion battle.
Right.
Instead, he just looks, you know, like he's wavering.
Exactly.
And that doesn't send a strong message at all. It just looks bad. For everybody.
And I will say this, though. Even though, I mean, it would have been great for Marino's name to be on this and for him to kind of become the face of this whole thing. But either way, I still think this lawsuit holds a lot of weight with or without Marino. It would have been great. It would have took it to another level if his name was on it. But still, this lawsuit still does hold a lot of weight, and I'm interested to see how it all transpires. Because the NFL still looks bad either way.
Yeah, and what I'm most interested about is not why Dan Marino took his name off, or not why Dan Marino was investing in it, but I'm more interested to see what happened here. Did either A, someone got to Dan Marino and said, hey man, as a friend, you shouldn't probably be leading this charge here for your career's sake. Did B, maybe it was the matter of not maybe just someone helping Dan as a friend, but maybe Dan Marino didn't understand what he was signing. I mean, it says in there that he was just looking for something that could protect himself. Maybe he honestly just didn't know that it was a lawsuit that he would be the face of. So that's what I'm most worried about, because the reason this is such a big story is because you're going to court, you're making a case, you're on a lawsuit, and then you're retracting it. Right. And it's Dan Marino on top of it. So for me, it's not why politically, but it's more a matter of what happened here.
Yeah, and I don't think that'll ever come out. But, you know, the fact that it did happen and now he's retracting it, it makes you wonder and it puts a lot of doubt in your head. It says, okay, why did you do this? So, all right, interesting stuff. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can call in throughout our entire show today and later on. Actually, I just got a text from associates of Dan Dickerson, and he will be on the show at 1:45 now, so our third segment of Current Sports. So don't want to miss that. Dan Dickerson, play-by-play voice for the Detroit Tigers Radio Network. We'll be talking about all things Tigers with him. You don't want to miss that. Let's hit the first break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Pistons' new GM. How about that? Is he a good fit? Bauer, a good fit. We'll give you our thoughts on that. And also Barbershop Wednesday, center on Nick Saban. Just Spartans, still to this day, dislike Nick Saban. We'll talk about that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, joined by Matt Lucky and Alex Sharg. You know, guys, really, this our whole Top 5 Tuesday segment really had a lot of feedback as we posted on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And just got another comment on this whole chart with the $15 and, you know, the each starting five position, who would you get and how much would you spend on who? And Sterling Hall says, I would go with Appling, Gary Harris, Jason Richardson, Zach Randolph, and Adrian Payne. That's a pretty good list. So he kind of had to say, well, no, because he chose Appling. I chose Cleaves and then Harris. But that's a pretty good line. This would be really interesting. I wish there was a simulator where we could really look at this and see what, with $15, what lineup would be the best lineup and who would win. I wish we really had that. But, hey, you know, that's good stuff. Thanks a lot, Sterling. Again, if you want to comment on that, go to facebook.com/currentsports, and I'll read it here right on the show. All right, guys. Well, Bauer, yes. Jeff Bauer, Pistons, new GM. How about that? Jeff Bauer is returning to the NBA, this time joining the front office with the Pistons. Detroit announced Tuesday that Bauer had been hired as the team's new general manager, part of an offseason overhaul in which Stan Van Gundy was hired last month as the coach and team president. Guys, I want to get your thoughts on what you think about this hire. For me, Bauer, you know, if you look at his resume, to be quite honest with you, isn't that impressive. After serving as an assistant at Marist from 1986 to 1995, he had a 15-year tenure in the NBA, held several positions, including GM and head coach of the Charlotte and New Orleans Hornets. Now, following five straight losing seasons, he was hired at Marist in April of 2013. Now, in one season as the Red Foxes head coach, he led the team to a 12-19 record. Sixth seed at Marist saw its season end with a 78-76 upset loss to Niagara, seeded 11th in the opening round of March's Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference tournament. So his resume, as far as winning and success goes, really isn't that impressive, to be honest with you guys. Really looking at this hire, when it comes to Jeff Van Gundy's perspective, this whole thing, Bauer is a very good longtime friend of Stan Van Gundy's, which is very important. And that's honestly what this was all about. Van Gundy wants a guy in there that he can trust, that he has a good rapport with, a guy that he can go to and they can, you know, powwow and talk with. And hiring somebody like that who's a longtime friend of his gives him now complete control in every aspect of this team. Mostly every aspect of this team right now is being decided by Stan Van Gundy. And that's exactly what this is all about. Because looking at his resume, nothing stands out where you're like, okay, that's our GM. That's what I saw in my eyes, Matt.
Well, I mean, you have to maybe put an asterisk next to the time with Charlotte and New Orleans, just because that was such a weird situation. I mean, the franchise moves, you know, changes cities. The ownership doesn't want to spend money. He kind of had his hands tied because, I mean, they were pretty good there for a few years when they had, you know, like Chris Paul and Emeka Okafor way back in the day. It just seems like this is a hire, like you said, for Stan Van to have someone in his corner in the front office. I mean, and especially in light of what happened with, say, Mark Jackson, where his relationship with the front office led to the end of his job despite his success on the court. You want to have somebody who you can trust, like you said, who is in your corner, who is going to support you, who is your, you know, quote-unquote right-hand man.
Right.
I think this is a fine pick. I mean, obviously his numbers at Marist don't inspire a lot of confidence.
No.
But he's not coaching.
Right. Exactly. It's a different position.
It's a totally different job, totally different responsibilities. It's going to be interesting to see how much he even, you know, plays a role in terms of the public eye and what the franchise does, or if it's just all Stan Van all the time. Because I could see it going either way. But at the end of the day, this is Stan Van's team. Right. He's going to make the decisions. I think, you know, Boyer's just there, or Bauer, just to be a facilitator. You know, right. He can't do it all the time in terms of Stan Van. You right. need somebody to pick up some of the slack. Why not pick a guy you have a longstanding relationship with and you know will be agreeable in most cases?
Yeah, that's very important. I mean, you hear all the time. I don't know how many times you hear about, you know, GMs or presidents and coaches, if you will, that just don't have the control and the hands-on ability to do and the freedom to do things with a squad. And I think now with Van Gundy, you know, having, you know, hiring a longtime friend like Bauer, it allows him to really have, he can do anything he wants now. I mean, he is in complete control. The keys are in his hand, and he can drive this car wherever he wants to. So I it's going to be interesting to see how it all pans out. So,
yeah. Oh, go ahead, Alex.
Oh, well, the one thing I'm worried about is as much as Stan may want control here, Bauer's still the general manager. And I have a feeling as the president that Stan Van Gundy is in somewhat of an operations kind of mix, everyone wants to kind of be their own GM. And as a friend, as someone hiring someone as a friend, that could be a little tricky, mixing that business with friendship and maybe Stan trying to have too much control of the team. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a time in the year where Stan Van Gundy starts doing some of the things that Jeff Bauer does as general manager. I don't know. Can you see that side of it, guys? I don't know.
So you're afraid that maybe they'll bump heads in any
way? Yeah, I mean, if you're hiring a longtime friend, I mean, first of all, it's very rare from a college basketball coach at Marist to be hired to an NBA team.
That's
and a
big leap.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been a general manager before and a head coach, but that's usually when guys are just trying to lay low. When you jump from professional to the college ranks, you're trying to just lay low. It's the same when Manny Ramirez gets offered a contract at a Triple A team to help mentor players, like we just saw recently, or and Mr. Baseball, when the only team that could take Jack Elliott is some Japanese team, and he kind of stays down there in that league, and it's just a little wishy washy in how it's a friend, but he has a lot of trust in him. Yet at the same time, there are plenty of good candidates that are probably still in the league right now, other than the college level that probably have more experience than what Jeff Bauer may have.
Well, you know what? As far as in the regard of possibly bumping heads, I think that's the reason why Van Gundy hired a friend. Because when you have a friend, somebody that you've known for a long time, it's easier to talk to them about a certain move or a certain situation than it is really somebody who's a complete stranger who you're trying to get to know, who you hired based on their resume. So I think that the reason that part of the big reason here that Van Gundy decided to hire Bauer was because they have a longtime friendship, which would possibly aid in them not bumping heads.
Right, and look at the NBA. That kind of arrangement works out more often than not. Look at the two finals teams. You have the Spurs with Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford, who go way back, have a long friendship, a long partnership in the NBA, and then the Heat with Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, where, you know, Riley was basically his mentor coming up in the coaching ranks. So when you have guys who are on the same page in the front office and at the head coaching position, you have a leg up on half the league.
Right.
Because, you know, inner office turmoil ruins more franchises than people know about.
Mm-hmm.
If you're all on the same page and operating at the same level, things are going to go smoothly, and that helps a lot on the court. So I think in terms of, you know, would they maybe butt heads and would this, you know, sour their friendship? I don't think that's going to happen. I think Van Gundy knows that he's more or less the top dog.
And I think Bauer knows that too.
Yeah, exactly. They both know what the pecking order is, and as long as that's how it, you know, as long as the status quo remains that, I think they'll be fine.
I think
it's a good move. Instead of hiring some upstart who has his own vision, you want to hire someone who's going to share your vision so that you can work together instead of, you know, trying to do your own thing with the same roster. So I think the more harmony in terms of the front office and the coaches, the better.
Yeah, and even another example, I mean, look at Phil Jackson when he tried to go after Steve Kerr, then Derek Fisher, who we got fined $25,000 for.
He's trying to get guys he knows who are still playing in the NBA.
Right, exactly.
So that goes to show. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that says a lot. All right, guys. Well, you know what? Let's dive into our Barbershop Wednesday before we invite Dan Dickerson on the show. You know, it was really interesting when I saw this this contract for Nick Saban. Nick Saban, of course, he now becomes one of the highest paid public employees in the United States. That's unbelievable. Saban's base salary now is $6.5 million with the opportunity of a performance bonuses and so on and so forth. You know, it's interesting because, again, man, I said at the top of the hour, I went out and tweeted, you know, that we'll be talking about this this subject. And at first, it wasn't going to be my Barbershop Wednesday. I had something else in mind. But the amount of feedback I got from different people and the amount of text messages I got from different people really alluded me to kind of bring this up. You know, I think it's been an elephant in the room that we have yet to talk about here, which I'm surprised we've yet to talk about this here on Current Sports. But just that the fact that there are many people rocking the green and white, there are many Spartan fans out there that still have a lot of animosity toward how things ended here in East Lansing when it comes to Nick Saban. Of course, Nick Saban was a one-time coach for the MSU football team, and I always get a lot of backlash. Anytime I bring up Nick Saban, whether it's, you know, my college roommate or buddies of mine, they say, oh, Nick Saban, I don't say that name around here, blah, blah, blah. And I really want to bring up the discussion on whether or not, what do you think that, what should Spartans feel like towards Nick Saban now with everything the dust has settled? Because I know we all three of us are MSU alumni. Of course, we follow sports adamantly, if not more than that, because that's obviously why we're on your radio right now. And we all know exactly kind of what happened with this whole thing. For me, Matt, I'm more of a forgiving Spartan fan, if you will. It was ugly. I will say this. When Nick Saban left here, there was a lot of anger in the hearts of many Spartan fans. And really what it came down to for me, looking at Saban's tenure here, Saban, to be frank with you, just couldn't get along with the athletic director at the time. And he figured that the grass was greener on the other side, maybe in the Bayou, and decided to make that move, which obviously turned out to be a smart move by his retrospect of things. And if you look at MSU president Peter McPherson, who was the MSU president at the time, they could not agree on a contract stalemate with Saban. And it just kind of just blew up, and he said, okay, I'm out of here. And if you remember during that time, I mean, MSU athletic department was not what it is right now. It was definitely it was an absolute mess, to be honest with you. It was not at a high point that it is right now. And he realized correctly that he would probably have a brighter future going somewhere to a program where he could communicate with the upper echelons of things easier. So I understand from his perspective. That's why I don't have a lot of animosity toward Nick, because in his shoes, I try to place myself in somebody else's shoes, which can be tough by all means. But looking at the situation he was dealt in that whole thing, he made the right decision. I can't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, the results kind of speak for themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, he wins a title in 2003 at LSU, goes on to win three more at Alabama.
Right.
But in terms of when he left, mm-hmm. I understand why people are upset.
And
you say maybe the grass is greener and his wallet is fatter when he went to LSU. I mean, it worked out in that regard, too.
Yeah.
I understand why people are upset, because it was, you know, the first time in ages MSU was on the cusp of being great. I mean, they beat Ohio State in 1998. Ohio State's the top-ranked team in the country. They had an uneven year, but then, you know, 1999, they go 9-2, and it looks like, whoa, we might be onto something here. And then he bolts. Before the bowl game, before the Citrus Bowl against Florida, he's gone.
Yep.
And it just left such a sour taste in people's mouths that, you know, this is finally happening. Michigan State football is going to be, you know, the cream of the crop in the Big Ten. And then the guy that built it bolts. It goes to LSU, who at that time was not LSU like they are now.
Right.
And the reason LSU is so successful now is because of Nick Saban.
Yeah, because of Nick, yeah.
It's not like he went to this super high-profile job. He just went to a better-paying job in a more football-crazy conference.
So it was more so how he left rather than leaving.
Exactly. But now, in 2014. Mm-hmm. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Michigan State just won the Rose Bowl. They had a better record than Alabama last year.
Right, exactly.
And there's no way, as much as Mark Hollis loves, you know, to take care of the coaching staff in all sports, there's no way he's going to pony up $6.9 million to keep Nick Saban.
But you know
what? This is not going to happen.
But I do believe this, though, man. I believe if Luana K. Simon and Mark Hollis were in a position that they are in now, back in the day when Nick was with the squad, I don't think Nick is leaving. I think Mark is that savvy.
There's a chance. But the other thing we're missing.
I don't know.
The other thing we're missing is that he also said things like, they'll never be the premier program in the state.
Mm-hmm. You'll
always be battling Michigan and Ohio State and Notre Dame for recruits.
Right. It did get ugly. Yeah,
it
exactly.
did. And that obviously irks Spartan fans with, you know, all the little brother stuff. I don't want to rehash that, but that kind of fed into that fire that, you know, I'll never be able to win there.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you see that they hire a guy who can win there and can recruit against Michigan and Ohio State and Notre Dame. So now I feel like it's water under the bridge.
Right, right.
You know, everybody needs to move past it.
Exactly.
Nick Saban doesn't care. He can't hear. He's got
he's rolling
stacks
the dough.
Of money blocking his ear. The guy, I mean, you say walk a mile in his shoes or spend a day in his shoes. Those are $6 million shoes.
Yeah, now they are. Yeah, now they are. You know, but, you know, looking at, just reading a quick tweet here from at Certified Chase. He says, man, best of luck to him. But with the asterisk you attached, he left because the Big Ten was U of M biased, and he knew it. Shaking my head. Thanks a lot, Certified Chase. Again, you can weigh in on the discussion by calling in 517-355-9527. Tweet me just like at Certified Chase just did, at Al Martin, WKAR, and also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Alex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to take the more positive end along with Certified Chase here. I'll shake my head a little bit, but look what he did bring, okay? First of all, Spartan fans should be celebrating that he didn't hire Urban Meyer when he applied to be his assistant coach back even before Michigan State at some point. That just says a lot from a joking standpoint. Second, you're bringing a team winning seasons since 1990 when, after they were sanctioned for the whole Perlis thing, this is the first time they were winning at all. If anything, Saban was able to put Michigan State back on the map compared to when they were losing year in, year out after when Perlis was here. So, you know, as much as Saban left Michigan State for the better team, and now he's winning, and the U of M bias, and not winning in the Big Ten, sure. But at the same time, as much as maybe he's not giving enough credit to his start at Michigan State, or maybe you're expecting more of him to give back, because you hear it all the time about Saban not really making an effort to come back here and whatnot. As much as that's an issue, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're in his shoes, I think most likely you're probably going to go there too in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, another aspect, just to kind of wrap it up real quick, Matt, before we get to you to close it out, a lot of it has to do with kind of Nick Saban's personality too. Because Nick kind of comes off as, if you ever watched an interview with him, or, you know, when he's in game mode, he kind of comes off as this stale, do not mess with me, I will drop kick you type of guy, you know? And when he left, again, it got really, really ugly because of what, you know, things that he said and how it was perceived right before a bowl game. And that's what rubbed a lot of fans wrong. And the fact that he does have this personality sometimes that kind of comes off as standoffish. And, you know, there's a method to his madness, because obviously it turns into wins and championships. But at the same time, it does not bode well for the overall social perception of the man that is Nick Saban.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, it was real easy to hate Nick Saban when he's, you know, lifting the crystal ball as a national champion and Michigan State fans are watching John L. Smith slap himself in postgame pressers. You know, like when you go from having a guy who, you know, becomes this titan in college football coaching, and then you hire John L. Smith and Bobby Williams before him to replace him.
Exactly.
It just twists the knife even more. But now they have, you know, Michigan State has their guy. I think it's yesterday's news.
Yeah, it definitely is. All right, folks, again, you can go to facebook.com/currentsports, tweet me at Al Martin, WKR, or call in at 517-355-9527. Well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Now, he knows all things Tigers, seeing as though he is the man behind the mic. That's right. Yes, the play-by-play announcer for the Detroit Tigers Radio Network, Dan Dickerson. Dan, thanks so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Al. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing, my brother?
Good, thank you.
All right. Let's dive right into this, Dan. We got to get right to it with the Tigers here. I got to ask you, with this recent slump that they're on right now, of course, losing last night to the Blue Jays, and looking at this these past few weeks, they have not been pretty if you're a Detroit Tigers fan. What do you accredit to the Tigers' current slump, and how alarming is this, seeing as though the season is still pretty young? I don't want to hit the panic button right now. Is that safe to say, Dan?
Safe to say when you're on pace for 93 wins at the one-third mark, it is a little early to push the panic button. No, it's been a rough couple of weeks, but you know what? You could look at that part of the schedule and see 16 out of 20 games on the road and know that when you have a streak like that, a stretch like that, that ends with a West Coast trip, you probably feel pretty good about 11-9, 10-10, 12-8, you know, in that 20 games. Now, the fact that they started that stretch 6-0 on the road, I think got everybody fired up, myself included. But you're just reminded, 162 games is a long season. They were 27-12. They were not going to win 112 games or whatever that computes to.
Right.
They were bound to cool off. Now, what got ugly was, you know, that stretch where they give up 10 runs in 3 out of 4 games, 10 or more, that looked ugly, and it was ugly. But, I mean, if you look at their recent losses, right now the offense has cooled off. Now, they just faced two of the best pitching staffs in baseball in Oakland and Seattle, the top two in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
So, you knew runs were going to be at a premium, and that's why a loss like the 3-1 loss on the walk-off home run hurts, especially because you have to win playing those teams in tight, low-scoring games. They did. They let that one get away. It happened. So, no, there's not. I mean, you look at the overall strength of this team. It's still the team that at 27-12 people thought was going to run away with the Central. You still got a lot of components. I mean, I always start with rotation. Is this rotation good? Yes. It's still the deepest 1-5 in the American League. I would argue yes. As soon as Drew Smiley gets back on track, it is. So that's still a strength. That's where I always start when you think about who's the team that's the favorite to win in the American League. Oakland right now is the best team in the American League. I don't think you can question that. They're strong in every single area you want to be strong in. But the Tigers have the potential to be very strong, starting pitching. Bullpen needs work, obviously.
Right.
And right now the offense is just not clicking. I mean, it's a long answer, but, I mean, this is still a very good team. It is still, to me, the clear favorite in the Central.
I think
a couple of hitters right now have to get back on track, and it will change the look of this team, I think, in a big way.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know, something we've talked about day in and day out here on the show, Dan, is that, you know, right now, like you just alluded to, the bullpen definitely could be a little better here. And if there's any Achilles heel on this team right now, it is that bullpen. I'm pretty confident that, you know, the runs will come. The runs will come with time. But right now, we've seen this bullpen struggle, and especially looking at the past, which I think is really harped on as to why Tigers fans out there are just kind of frustrated in that area of this ball squad. What do you think about the bullpen, and do you have any confidence that it will get better as the season rolls on? Especially looking at last night, you know, with Joel Nathan having the outing that he had. I mean, you know, as a Tigers fan, I mean, many are frustrated.
Well, first of all, I don't think Joel Nathan had a bad outing last night. I really don't.
Okay.
Walked the first man, okay, that's not good. But what did he do after that? Give up a single, runners at first and third. Then he made the pitches to get out of that issue. He gets Melky Cabrera to pop out, and he gets Jose Bautista to hit a ground ball that, in my opinion, should have been an inning-ending double play.
Right.
And for some reason, and it's a mystery, I think even Andrew Romine is not quite sure what happened, but he stutter-stepped as he went to the ball. For some reason, he's not blaming Kinsley. It's on him. He made that quite clear, I think, in the post game. And it happened. But it was like, for whatever reason, he stutter-stepped, and what could have been an inning-ending double play, no run, turns into an inning where, you know, Joe Nathan came out right after that, and it was the runners who were on base who came home to score when someone else gave up those runs. I didn't think that was a bad outing at all for Joe Nathan. I mean, he gets hung with four runs, now his ERA is 6, and everybody's wondering what the heck's wrong with Joe Nathan. I think he had a bad outing in Oakland. I don't think, and you know, he was shaking Seattle, but I thought last night was actually a step forward for Joe Nathan. I really did. In terms of, he faced dangerous hitters, and he made pitches, should have gotten 3 outs to end the inning. But the rest of the bullpen, Java Chamberlain's been very good. I'm very confident when he takes them out. Al Albuquerque gave up the home run last night. That surprised me because he's been better. He and Cole's pretty solid. You know, they're working in the right spots. He's getting big outs, not on base. I find that impressive. But they probably need another arm or two. That's why they went out and got Joel Hanrahan, and that's why I would guess, unless somebody steps up in a big way soon, we'll trade for another veteran arm, I would think, at the trade deadline, because to me that is the biggest need. Could you use another bat? Well, let's see how that pans out. Austin Jackson is not a 240 hitter. That
right.
bat's going to heat up. It really is. I think Castellanos has gone through a time where the league adjusted to him. He's got to adjust back. I think he's better than what we've seen in recent weeks. To me, the biggest need would be probably another veteran arm. And we don't know about Hanrahan. Everybody's hoping coming back from Tommy John is going to add to that bullpen. But I'm not really worried about Joe Nathan. I'm really not. I know the last three outings, you can say, hey, he's given up this many runs. I really thought last night was a step forward for him.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with the play-by-play announcer for the Detroit Tigers Radio Network, Dan Dickerson. So, Dan, you know, I was reading some headlines this morning. The Tigers are expected to receive a medical update on shortstop Jose Iglesias later on today. If he does return this season, first of all, do you expect that to happen? And if he does, how big do you think that'd be for this ball club?
Well, I think that's probably another area that I didn't talk about that maybe needs addressing. You know, I've liked Andrew Romine at shortstop, but he's made a few errors of late, and that was a big missed opportunity, I guess you could say, defensively last night. I think he's actually got some really nice actions at short and has made some plays. He doesn't grade out especially well, but maybe that's a position they will address. But I think your point's a good one. If they get an update on Iglesias that says, hey, he got a chance. Now, he's been resting, really. I mean, everything I've understood is that the best thing you can do for stress fractures of your leg is to rest. But maybe they get an update on how far he's progressed, how much that rest has helped with fractures. I mean, let's say that now you're thinking, hey, he can come back mid to late August. Well, that's a huge lift for this team. And then maybe you don't need to go make a deal. Or I would think if they're going to make any move at short, it would be Eugenio Suarez, the young man at Toledo's 20. I think he's 21 years old, still just a baby. But
right.
Can produce some things at the bat. And I guess, I mean, we've seen him enough at short to know this kid is he's a good-looking shortstop.
Yes, he is.
He makes errors on routine plays that in the minor leagues. That's something that if you're working with Omar Vizquel, I think you can get better.
right.
So it'll be intriguing to see if I won't be surprised at all to see him get a call sometime, in the next couple of months. I won't be a surprise at all. And again, if you get good news on Iglesias, I'm not expecting him back. I think the Tigers had the mindset of, we can't plan on him being back, so how do we move forward without him? And if you get an update that says, hey, he's got a chance to go on a rehab assignment by mid-August, that'd be great news. But I think right now everybody's just, that'd be the best possible scenario. Right now the plan is, hey, let's plan for 2015, and if it's different, great.
Right. Yeah, I have a kind of a man crush on Jose Iglesias, Dan. He is unbelievable.
He's phenomenal. you get chills watching some of the plays that guy makes.
It's crazy.
Plays that other guys just can't play. He's got a creativity about him that he sees things that others don't. And, possibilities exist with him on the field that simply don't exist.
Right. That is so true. All right, Dan, before we let you get out of here, I really briefly want to talk about the starting pitching for the Tigers, specifically when it comes to Justin Verlander, right? Because right now, he has a 3.99 ERA. Do you think we will ever see the lights out JV of old, Dan?
Well, what I think we're seeing is a guy who's probably, realizing in his early 30s after facing a few thousand batters over the course of his career that he doesn't necessarily have to change a lot. But I think because he can't reach back and get 97 to 99 anymore, but he can still get in the 95, 96 range, which is, believe me, for a starting pitcher, plenty, with a pitcher that he has. He's a four-pitch pitcher, and each pitch on any given night can be a plus pitch for him.
Right.
I think he's still learning how to transition to a guy who could reach back in the 7th to get 99 to a guy who doesn't have that anymore. And so how much do I need to conserve at the beginning of a game and still have something at the end? And I think we've seen games now where he's been 89 to 91 at the start, and then he's got something later. And I think he's finding out, and this is what we saw in his last start, that he can be more 92, 94 at the start of a game. And believe me, that's a big difference and still have that in the sixth and seventh inning when he still needs it. And I think that's something that he's learning, and it's something that I think his last start we saw, and I think that'll be something to look for fans to look for in his next start Thursday. How does he start the game? You know, what's the fastball velocity? Because it does tell a story with Justin Verlander. Not with everybody, but it does with Justin.
Right.
And if it's more 92, 94 to start with the occasional 95, and then he can sit at 91, 92, and then again gear it back up versus 89, 91 early on. I mean, those to me are that's what we've seen this year. Kind of those are the ranges. And I think his last start was a good indicator that he can do that. He can be a little firmer with the fastball early and still have it late.
Yeah, there you have that. Definitely looking forward to see how that transpires with JV in the future. And really briefly, we only got about 4 minutes left, Dan. You know, looking at, you know, Max Scherzer this year, $144 million over 6 years is what he turned down, a contract year for him, to show that he's worth more than that. Do you think he was insane in the membrane for turning that down?
Now, one word I would never use with Max is insane. He's one of the sharpest people I've met at this game. He's a math guy. He's a numbers guy.
Yeah.
He likes figuring things out. And I think this is, you know, and you can't really blame him. I mean, he might not get a whole lot more than that. But you know what? This is the one time in his life that he's going to get a chance to see what his ultimate value is on the open market. It won't happen again. This is the one time.
Right.
And sure, $144 million is a great contract. And again, I'm not sure how much more than that he'll get. But if he wants to find out that, you know, he's thinking, okay, that's a great offer. He knows that's a great offer. He's no dummy.
Right.
But I don't know. I guess the motivation of finding out, you know, that one time in your life what you're really worth on the open market is appealing to him. And it doesn't mean he's not going to be back. I think it'll be much more difficult now to come back because – to me, that's an offer that was made at the time, and I'm not sure, you know, they can re-sign him, but they did with Sanchez. Just remember that. So,
right.
I think Max likes it here. I'm not sure if there's maybe a team that he'd rather. I mean, maybe he'd rather be somewhere. I don't know where. I don't know. Does he want to be a Yankee or a Dodger or a Red Sox? I don't know. There aren't many teams that are going to go a whole lot higher than that. Just remember when you think about where he might go. Dodgers already have $55 million a year tied up in two pitchers, Kershaw and Greinke. The Yankees still have a year or two left on Sabathia at $20-some million a year. So it's not like the obvious teams have necessarily the big money that he might be looking for. I think Boston could be a destination because they haven't re-signed Lester.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I hope a little miracle occurs and he comes back here because he's truly one of my favorite people in the game.
Yeah, he is unbelievable. All right, Dan. Well, the Tigers are in action. Game two of the three-game series against the Blue Jays tonight at home. 7:08 p.m. time for the first pitch. Rick Porcello on the mound versus R.A. Dickey. Hey, Dan Dickerson. Dan, thanks a lot for joining me today.
Al, anytime. You take care.
All right, you do the same. Oh, gotta love that. All right, folks. Well, we only have 1 minute left in the show. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning into today's Current Sports. Thanks a lot to Dan Dickerson, who is the play-by-play voice for the Detroit Tigers Radio Network. Again, the Tigers are in action. Game two versus the Toronto Blue Jays as they try to shake off that 5-3 loss yesterday. Let's see if they can do it, folks. Let's all hold our breath and cross the fingers and knock on wood. All right. Well, you've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on the BKRE's Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Wednesday. And as always, be easy, people.